From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A group of ethics experts has come together to produce a detailed 250-page report into the Attorney General of the United States, William Barr. The University of Pennsylvania's Center for Ethics and the Rule of Law Ad Hoc Working Group, in partnership with Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, published the report. And after examining various instances of Barr's troubling conduct, are recommending an impeachment inquiry against him. My guest is Claire Finkelstein. She is the Algernon Biddle Professor of Law and Professor of Philosophy and Faculty Director of the Center for Ethics and the Rule of Law at UPenn. She's also one of the co-chairs of the Ad Hoc Working Group. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
So let's start with the issues that you examined with Barr's conduct. Many have described him in the media as acting more like the president's personal attorney than the top enforcement officer for the entire United States. And although attorneys general are appointed by presidents, they are meant to be independent. And you start your, one of the main issues you take on is how William Barr ensured that the special counsel's report into misconduct with the 2016 election, how he sort of misrepresented that to the American public. What troubled you about his conduct there?
Well, we review in this report eight separate areas in which there is a common theme. The common theme is that the Attorney General is acting more like the campaign manager for the Trump re-election campaign than like the chief law enforcement officer of the country. So in the particular example that you mentioned, when Robert Mueller came out with his findings, there was an expectation on the part of the Mueller team that the summaries that they themselves had prepared would be what would be rolled out to the American public, so that the investigators, Robert Mueller and his highly trained team, his lawyers who were working with him, would be able to communicate with the American public their findings in their own words. And Bill Barr did two things that are really shocking and were deeply concerning to the working group. Number one is, instead of taking the summaries of the Mueller team, he wrote his own letter and gave his own rollout and did not release the report to the American people or to Congress. And so what the American people knew for quite a while was only Mr. Barr's summary. Then it turned out that that summary was really highly inaccurate. And so professionally, it's incredibly problematic, both from the standpoint of professional ethics and from the standpoint of the role of the Attorney General and what's proper for an Attorney General to do under those circumstances, for him to show such extreme favoritism and protection of Donald Trump that he did not actually allow the investigators' words to reach the public in their own right. And then he did this in a second respect, which is when Congress asked for the report, he gave them only a heavily redacted version of the report, and the same then eventually for the American public. And it seems that the redactions were not based wholly on protection of a grand jury material, which would be legitimate to hide because that material is legally secret, or classified material. Some of the redactions in the report were based on classification issues, but that other things were redacted, other matters were redacted where there was no justification for doing so other than, once again, trying to protect the president.
Now, President Trump was quite upset with his previous Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, because Sessions had recused himself from the Russia investigation. When Barr came in to replace him, Barr did not recuse himself. Should he have?
Well, that's a question that the committee dealt with. And in fact, we did come to the conclusion that the Attorney General should have recused himself and that he was not in a position to give an impartial assessment of Mr. Mueller's report. And the reason for that is that he had already taken a very strong position. He wrote a 19-page memo that many people see as a kind of, job interview almost, or a job application, trying to get himself appointed attorney general. And in that 19-page letter, he showed that he had really already prejudged the case. He almost approached Donald Trump with the promise or holding out the suggestion that, hey, if you appoint me attorney general, you won't have to worry about the rollout of Mr. Mueller's report because I'm going to massage it for you. Mm-hmm. Then when the actual moment for the rollout of the report came, he really should have had second thoughts, looked at that and said, I've already opined on this. I'm not in a position to give a neutral readout of this report.
The other aspect of Barr's conduct that you take up is his role in the matter that was at the heart of the impeachment hearings around President Trump regarding the U.S.'s relationship with Ukraine and Trump's, attempt to use the president of Ukraine to further his political career. And Barr's name came up in the hearings. What about Barr's role there troubled you and seemed to violate ethical standards?
There we had a really grave concern without knowing all the facts. But the concern was based on the fact that the president said, talk to Bill Barr. So the president himself suggested that Bill Barr was in some way involved in the Ukraine scandal. The committee was uncertain whether or not Mr. Barr should legally or ethically have recused from the Ukraine matter because we do not know all the facts. But if the president's remarks suggest that Bill Barr was in fact involved in some way in putting pressure on Ukraine in order to get their cooperation with regard to the 2020 election, then it would have been highly improper for Mr. Barr to have anything to do with that investigation.
There has also been the Durham investigation that Barr seems to have politicized quite deeply. Tell us what this investigation was and why you studied it in your report.
So the report that everyone has been expecting from John Durham, who was appointed by Bill Barr to look into the origins of the Russia probe, we've all been expecting a report to come out, and many people thought that report would come out before the election. And we fully expected that report to identify certain individuals who were involved in some way in the origins of the Russia probe, in particular members of the intelligence community who had initially realized, hey, there's a problem here. The Trump campaign is in touch with Russia. And instead of answering these questions about the president's contact with Russia, instead of addressing them head on, what the administration has sought to do at every point is to spin matters so that the problem is not the Trump campaign's contact with Russia, but the problem is the people who were investigating those contacts. There's been an attempt to construct a false narrative and a false timeline around the Crossfire Hurricane investigation. And to suggest that, in fact, this was a kind of Obama plot to undo and to spy on the Trump campaign. There is, in fact, no basis for that. And it is quite telling. After an embargo copy of our report was released, that we heard just the other day from Bill Barr that, in fact, John Durham is not going to be ready with his report before the election. We don't know exactly what lies behind that, but it is our hope that Mr. Barr is thinking better of appointing U.S. attorneys, and John Durham is not the only one, but that's been the most high profile case, to try to investigate people who are investigating the Trump campaign's contacts with Russia.
And then there's there's also the favorable treatment that Attorney General William Barr has given to Trump's colleagues and associates. Very blatant favorable treatment to people like Roger Stone and Michael Flynn in a way that has really shocked other attorneys and people who observe these issues, the ethics experts, etc.
Right. So that was another area that the working group looked into because we were extremely concerned about that. When you start distorting the prosecutorial powers of the Justice Department so that you are using those powers either to prosecute or investigate the president's political rivals or enemies, or you are using the powers of that department to alleviate pressure on those who might otherwise cover for the president, then you have a very, very corrupt system of justice. And it looks as though that's the direction that Bill Barr has been heading down. So when you look at the Roger Stone case, it's really absolutely extraordinary that the president was willing to give him a commutation on his sentence. There's been a lot of speculation about why a commutation, why not a pardon? And I think the reason is that he wants to make sure that Roger Stone retains the ability to plead the fifth so that he will effectively silence Roger Stone so that Roger Stone will not turn on the president. So it's pretty amazing that Barr has been willing to engage in these kinds of politics on behalf of the president, because it looks like these are really very personal interests of the president's. They have to do with the president's own personal wrongdoing. And Mr. Barr is here acting not only like his campaign manager, but is actually acting like his attorney. We saw this in the Michael Flynn case as well. I mean, Flynn was a cooperating witness. And by asking, demanding to have the case against Flynn dismissed after not one, but two guilty pleas on the part of Michael Flynn, it's really an incredible distortion of the Justice Department's normal processes. It's highly improper, and the motivation for it is very concerning.
One of the very troubling aspects of the Attorney General's office is the way in which federal troops have been deployed to the United States. And of course, you tackle this in your report as well. Not only have we seen federal officers being deployed to Portland, where Black Lives Matter protests have been active, we also saw them being deployed in Washington, D.C. itself, very close to the White House, to help clear protesters ahead of Trump's church front photo op. I know that Congress has been investigating that use of force because federal officers very violently cleared that space. And I also recall recently when the Antifa activist named Michael Reinhold was killed by federal officers during his arrest. Attorney General Bill Barr, you know, praised the officers on the website of the DOJ in a statement saying that this was, you know, part of the clearing away of violent mobs. This man who was killed by these officers had not even been charged or tried, and he's basically being, you know, denounced after his death as a violent criminal. If anybody should understand that you're innocent until proven guilty, you would expect the Attorney General to. Quite shocking. So how serious is this in your mind, this deployment of federal troops into American cities?
Yeah, again, Sonali, what we have here is a real distortion of the law. We are seeing an attorney general who is willing to use legal concepts to achieve political ends. So what happened in Portland? Well, first of all, there is the messaging around Antifa, as you suggested. Now, there is no authority under federal law for the attorney general or for the president to declare a certain group a domestic terrorism group. We have criminal law to deal with domestic crime. And then we have our intelligence community that deals with foreign threats. Treating a domestic group, which is not even quite a group, a kind of loose association of individuals flying under the banner of Antifa, treating a domestic group as though they were a foreign terror group is not supported in American law at all. So that's the first thing, is sort of turning this apparatus, which is the intelligence community apparatus designed to keep us safe from foreign threats on a domestic population, is very worrisome, has long history in totalitarian regimes of people misusing the power of the state against political rivals. So that's number one. Then number two, couple that with a distortion of the law that says that federal buildings can be protected. So there was the federal courthouse in Portland. That was the kind of thin reed on which Bill Barr hung the authority to send out federal troops. Now realize how unprecedented this was. When we had federal troops coming out under the Insurrection Act in Los Angeles, in the case of the Rodney King demonstrations and riots, that was with the agreement and at the request of the city of Los Angeles and the governor of California. Here we had a situation in which the mayor of Portland and local and state officials were saying, we do not need your help. We do not want federal officials here. But nevertheless, there was this use of this law, a distorted use, in order to say that, well, we have the right to send in federal officials who, by the way, were engaging in all sorts of problematic acts, were not properly self-identified. They were not wearing name badges. Their authority was never made clear. And they were engaging, in some cases, in acts of violence, abductions, really lawless kind of conduct, mostly against peaceful protesters, in many cases far away from the courthouse, where their legal authority really didn't apply at all.
And so, and also this whole approach to tackling, you know, this perception of violence breaking out in American cities is a central campaign aspect of the Trump re-election campaign. So Trump says law and order, Barr sends federal troops to cities, and they're working hand in glove in a way that they're just not supposed to, right?
Well, that's exactly right. And then the situation in D.C. was very concerning for these, but for somewhat different reasons. There we really identified, and the working group did original interviews with a number of people, but in this case, a very helpful interview that made clear just how involved Mr. Barr was in ordering the use of tear gas and pepper spray on peaceful protesters prior to the curfew that had been announced in DC by officials themselves, and that he was really working closely with the DC police to engage in quite a lawless action. And why did he did it? Why did he do it? In order to facilitate the president crossing the street and holding up a Bible in front of the church in Lafayette Square, which were it not the president and he were exempt, would really be a Hatch Act violation, using your official position to support a political campaign. So this was an extremely problematic thing for the attorney general to be involved in, and he definitely should not have done it. It is an abuse of office for which we are requesting an impeachment inquiry.
Right. So that actually, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was my next question. Since this is a 250-page report, there's so much to discuss here, but your first recommendation in this report is to open up an impeachment inquiry against Bill Barr. What would that look like? I mean, the president has already been impeached, although he was acquitted in the Senate. But his attorney general, who impeaches an attorney general, and you know, is there political will to do that?
So what we are calling for is an impeachment inquiry.
I see.
Because of course our committee does not have subpoena power. We did not have the ability to carry out as full of an investigation as Congress could carry out. But we firmly believe that it is important for Congress now, especially in the wake of the decision, the Mazars decision, in which the Supreme Court said, yes, Congress does have subpoena power, but it needs to be very clear about its legal basis for exercising that power. So one of the things that could be very important here is that if, say, the House Judiciary Committee, which is where this would likely start, announced an inquiry into Bill Barr's conduct and specifically labeled that inquiry an impeachment inquiry, they would immediately be able to get facts that our working group did not have access to and documents that could tell it whether or not there was impeachable abuse of office here. We believe from the indications that we have that there was, but our inquiry could not replace Congress's. But it's absolutely critical now that Congress be clear about their legislative basis for acting and that they have a clear legislative purpose. We believe that Barr's conduct is so egregious that Congress would be very well within their rights to demand answers, and they ought to do so before the election. They ought to start that immediately because it will be relevant to the American people to understand what this attorney general has been doing on behalf of the president.
Claire, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to the entire report from our website so that our audience can download it and read it themselves. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
My guest has been Claire Finkelstein. She is the Algernon Biddle Professor of Law and a Professor of Philosophy and Faculty Director for the Center for Ethics and the Rule of Law at the University of Pennsylvania. She's also one of the co-chairs of the ad hoc working group that published a report that we've just been discussing that recommends an impeachment inquiry into William Barr and his conduct at the Department of Justice. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.